thank you for coming in and joining us here. Greg Enser runs the Southern California for MicroStrategy. With me, we have Rick Pector, who is our Vice President of Advanced Analytics, which includes predictive analytics and a lot of the things you're going to see today, the natural language generation and machine learning. So we got a lot to share in a very short period of time. But I will say, and we also have Scott Owen, who is a senior account executive managing here in Southern California in the key accounts. On your way out, make sure you grab a mug and a flyer and some of the details about what we do. Which I'll hand it over to you.
Thank you, Greg.
How many of you know what MicroStrategy, a company, does? How many of you are MicroStrategy users, actually? Okay, just got a few. Yeah, that's good. Actually, I'm going to talk a little bit more at the end about the company in more detail. I'm an engineer type, so I'm going to try and keep you engaged, especially since I'm spending between you and lunch. And I'll argue that every day we start our day navigating technology. I live in San Diego, so now I'm in Hollywood. And I may have woken up this morning and thought my meeting was going to be later in the day after the keynote, but the agenda switched on me a little bit. So I quickly, fired up my PC, did some things, and maybe done stuff on my desktop. In the meantime, I'm going to watch some news. And all this stuff has changed so much just over just even a short period of time. The iPhone is less than 12 years old. The iPad is less than 9 years old. We had the first PCs come out like 20 years ago and approach even more than that. We now have MacBook Air. Our relationship with technology is so different. Today, when I found out my time had changed a little bit, it was really easy for me to get in here with my laptop and do stuff where before I might have been dependent on a desktop. I realized I'm at a media and an entertainment event. Those new services that I'm listening to today didn't really exist, 25 years ago. In fact, there were just kind of three stations when I was growing up. Now we've got a lot more options, and now because we've got streaming devices and things like that, the whole world is changing, and it seems to be just changing and evolving more quickly. And so my talk today is about an intelligent way to bring together enterprise analytics with machine learning, natural language, artificial intelligence, and deep learning. So I credit our marketing people for probably cramming as much into one title as we possibly could. So for the agenda that I'm going to go through is kind of talk about this evolution with our relationship with technology. I'm going to get to the bringing together in the intelligent way at the end, but I want to start kind of with deep learning, natural language generation, machine learning, but focus on artificial intelligence. So that seems to be the buzzword these days. It's hard to turn on the TV and not find a commercial where somebody's talking about AI. And so, everything evolves and goes to things. If you think about anybody being in computers, that for many times used to be you didn't even have a screen. Everything was gray bar, green bar printouts. In the 70s, we got monochromatic monitors. In the 80s, we got our first spreadsheet. In the 90s, Excel gave us a better spreadsheet. In the 2000s, we really got the ability to deliver stuff by web. And now if you think about this decade, we've got dashboards, scorecards, and the ability really to deliver information to mobile and different touch points and things in everybody's hands. Behind this these days, there's a whole bunch of things like application software. Where does the data come from? What kind of services do we have working? I'm not going to talk about any of that too much today. So we do have a lot of information on that. If you're a data person or want to know where to get that stuff, I'd be glad to get into that with you. What I really want to try and just focus on is some use cases, especially in this industry, and also tie it back to artificial intelligence. The first use case I want to talk about is using machine learning to forecast new releases. I've been working for MicroStrategy about 18 years. I've had the benefit of working with various studios in the area, Universal, Fox, and Buena Vista, three that come to mind. All three of them, I've worked on a variation of a problem of just trying to forecast sales. It used to be DVDs. About 90% of the volume of DVDs occurs in the first 2 weeks. And if you don't make enough, you're going to miss that business and probably never catch up. If you make too many, then you've lost capacity you could have put elsewhere. One studio had lots of developers using expensive tools, although it looks like they want to move over from SAS to R. And they injected this into their ETL flow. They didn't bother with the database people. They did all that pre-processing and all that machine learning, and then it hit the database, and everybody reports off the database. A different studio did something different. They did it more where you're going to have a bunch of sources, BI sources, and report on that. They have a lot of tools at play, and they wanted to give people the ability to do ad hoc reporting, create their own documents, create their own reports, and not have to depend always on IT to do things. The third studio, I got a great quote from their guy. He goes, those guys spend millions of dollars on a lot of data science, and they still don't get it right. We just want to stay focused and react fast. I want to be able to look at what's happening on Sunday night so I can do something different on Monday. And I'm talking about DVDs, and it's changed, right? We don't have the same content anymore. It's not just DVDs and producing a physical product. We are streaming on demand. We have different formats, including 3D formats that they have to track. And so my observation I always make is that to do things on new content, if I'm going to come out with a new movie and I really want to try and forecast its market is, I look at a bunch of things, like the genre, the actors, the director, the topic, the timing, but also what happened in the past and what happened to other peers, because that's actually what's more predictable. And that's one reason why we have Fast and Furious 7, that's why we have Jurassic Park 9, that's why we have these movies, because they are predictable. It gives them the producers a much better understanding of what's going to not be a flop, which is the thing that they're trying to avoid. We focus on advanced analytics and deep learning and machine learning. This is Google trends for the past decade, so going back from 2010. One thing that's interesting is I updated this for this talk. We may have jumped the shark, at least on AI. That's the top chart. I apologize if I might be small for you on the back. The top chart is artificial intelligence. We got the years broken up here. Deep learning really has taken off. It's all relative on a 0 to 100 scale. Machine learning still remains to be popular and trendy these days. These are things that people are Googling, talking about, wanting to find out about it. How many people here are data scientists? How many people are not data scientists? How many have watched a data science video on YouTube, though, to figure out something that you didn't know about data science? It's great these days, right? If you want to learn something or know something, and within 10 or 15 minutes, you can learn things, and it makes it very accessible. There's a big democratization going on. And so what that allows us to do is actually do a better job of integrating these technologies into our products. Watson was probably one of the leading artificial intelligence popularity thing. IBM, including we have some IBM people in the room, has done a good job of taking that technology, which was good at winning Jeopardy, but also then helping doctors answer questions about what might be going on with a diagnosis and add that artificial intelligence. And so Watson's probably the most famous non-violent artificial intelligence out there. But we all have cameras on our phones now that recognize faces. And behind the scenes there's actually a little bit of a neural network working that knows face detection. And it's kind of actually pretty amazing now, not only the face detection, but they can tell you whose face that is. They can go and find all your pictures and everybody with that face in your pictures. And it's kind of amazing how that analytic can work. And it's all a function of deep learning. I wouldn't necessarily call that artificial intelligence. We even have a learning thermostat now, right? The Nest thermostat that will learn and begin to understand your behaviors and things. And it's not just a dumb thermostat with some mercury thing that just toggles on our wall. It actually does a better job of understanding your patterns. We've got Siri. We've got Alexa. We've got Cortana on Mac. We've got so many different things we can talk to now, digital assistants. We also have all the major players open sourcing a lot of their deep learning capabilities. And so before we used to buy some expensive hardware and some expensive software, now you can just get access to it. Again, watch a few YouTube videos, take a class or something, and now you have access to the same technology that other people do. And so what I want to try and do in this talk is maybe demystify a little bit the relationship between these. Artificial intelligence, I'm going to focus on. Deep learning, I'll argue, is a subset of AI. And I think when most people think of AI, they think of generalized AI, and I'm going to kind of contrast that. Machine learning is anything we do where a machine is going to go and look at a bunch of things and make predictions and do work and so a human doesn't have to and find patterns much faster than a human can. I'll argue that the vast majority of data science up until we got to deep learning and artificial intelligence was probably more just a machine learning type of thing where there's a certain methodology at play. So let's focus a little bit on the artificial intelligence. Plus, I'm kind of near Hollywood, so I wanted to make this fun. Last Friday night, I'm watching on HBO Bill Maher, and Neil deGrasse Tyson is on, and there was a little bit of an interesting interchange. Let's see if this plays. And I almost hear him. Nope. It's okay, cool. I didn't need that to work. basically, one of the things Bill said was he noted a post that scientists are kind of arguing, warning about AI. And Stephen Hawking saying that the development of full artificial intelligence could spell the end of the human race. And so what Bill Maher said was, you know, I'm on the side of yes, AI is bad, because everything I've seen in the movies, you know, everything that bad happens in the movies and happens in real life, and the robots will take over. He was real emphatic about that. Why does Bill feel like that? I've got four films that I want to talk about. Anybody remember this movie Colossus, The Forman Project? Okay, so when I was very, very young, though, it's the first time I learned about computer science, maybe actually being a technology that you could actually do stuff with. Long story short, this is the ultimate computer becomes the master of man, and the result spells catastrophe. Long story short, the world blows up. War games. If you remember war games. Another thing that, you know, World War III is averted when the ultimate computer learns that there's no way to win thermonuclear war, which is a game. Of course, there's HAL in 2001. I couldn't get away with talking about it without HAL, including, you know, kind of the cool, I'm sorry, Dave, I can't do that. And the ultimate computer malfunctions and kills the entire crew. Finally, there's Terminator. And at the end, there's a great quote from Schwarzenegger. Basically, Skynet becomes self-aware. Anybody know the date? Actually, I didn't Google that one either, so it's okay. So bottom line, you know, we have all this stuff. Neil deGrasse Tyson, in response, says that, you know, if A gets up and it achieves consciousness and it's coming towards you, are you going to say, will you be my friend? Will you be my pet? No, this is America. Just shoot it. And you can kind of see April Ryan kind of, ooh, okay. In fact, April Ryan commented, well, they're going to shoot two, and Neil deGrasse Tyson's comment was, well, they don't have opposable thumbs. The takeaway is, if you're going to build a robot, don't give your robot opposable thumbs. But more seriously, this is I'm going to have an open letter to all the AIs out there. In fact, we heard about in the talk that I was in just before, we all want AI to do better things for our business. And, you know, you can go ahead and get your hands on my browser table. In fact, this is a ripoff of a song, but bear with me. You can take my fingerprints if you're able, pick my brain, pick my pocket, steal my eyeballs. We're all about eyeballs lately. Come back for the sockets. You can run every kind of test that the socket says from A to Z, but we'll go A to B. And I'm going to argue, you still don't know nothing about me. You can run my name through your computer. You can mention me and pass it to your college tutor. You can check my records, check my facts, check if I paid my income tax. Pour over everything in my CV and with LinkedIn, it's all out there, right? You can find out a lot of things. But I'll argue you still don't know anything about me, the person. In fact, you can search my house. One thing I like about this one is a room that is stuck under something. You know, tell me what you see. And you still really don't know anything about me. And in fact, that is kind of the way it should be. I don't know if I want an AI out there really knowing, needing to know all this stuff just to help me out. In fact, what the song, kind of the coda of the song is, you know, you don't need to read books on my history. I'm pretty simple. It's no big mystery. Just like in cold weather, when a hand needs a glove, when I need you, all I need to do is feel the love. And so my posit here is that the best AI is the AI that makes you feel the love. And so I want to give you some examples of how the AI may make you feel the love. First example is natural language generation. This is another video that's going to play. I'm going to talk over it even though we don't have the audio. MicroStrategy, we take all that data. We do charts and graphs and we can, you know, display things. But wouldn't it be better if somebody interpreted this for you and sent you that summary so you don't have to find the information yourself? You can go ahead and have it tell you exactly what's going on. It responds to your filters. It responds to your interactivity. It can even do things where here I'm changing the filter, but maybe I'm different roles in the organization. Maybe I'm the CEO versus a manager. Well, regional managers may need to do one thing, but if I'm the CEO, I'm going to want them to do something else. And so the same dashboard if I'm the CEO is actually because we know your ID, we know your role. We're going to present you information and recommendations that are tied to your role compared to the manager. And so this is a little bit example of how I can feel the love now. If I can get a text that tells me what's going on with this chart rather than just sending me the chart that I have to go and look at, that's going to make me feel a lot more efficient. Now, we partner with Automated Insights to do that, and it's a great technology that really is something that 2 years ago wasn't even possible. When we're speaking about, this is natural language generation, because we're generating stuff that humans can understand. There's natural language query, and I didn't have time to include our SmartBot demo, but you can literally interact with an AI, and that's I think most of the times we're dealing with an AI, it is on a bot. It's a chat bot or something like that. I prefer a smart bot because most of the chat bots don't seem to be smart enough for me. It also is a little bit of an analytics are kind of moving from numbers to text. And so, you know, natural language processing, being able to talk to my computer and have it understand what I say and then act upon it, those are things that we also are delivering with customers and have a good Alexa integration and things like that. Third use case, sentiment analysis. In fact, in the last session, somebody mentioned sentiment analysis and she was very happy. Here's a dashboard I did a couple years ago for our customer, NBC Universal, for one of their movies. If you're a social media person, you're going to do some posts. Each one of these squares represents a post. The lines represent how many comments or things that a post received. I can do the normal dashboarding stuff, but I can also look at the key influencers. How many people responded or made a comment on my post, and then how many likes did that comment get? And typically what you do is you do a Pareto chart of that, and the person at the top is probably your key influencer. Yet we don't have any idea whether they're saying anything good or bad. And so imagine if you could add sentiment analysis to that. And now I've color-coded these bars. I go back. All that changed was now the bar has colors. Green is good. In fact, I can click on that and filter. This person got the most likes just for saying good movie. The next person had kind of a mediocre response. You kind of see here, negative. You know, something's not set up right in this one. It goes on to explain why. We also have another kind of, I'm confused on this one. Now, if I'm a social marketer and I want to get to these influencers, maybe I'm going to send them the director's cut information or the information that maybe came off the extras DVD or point them to something that helps answer their questions and maybe turn around some of these negative comments to be positive. And that would be a case where an AI is doing a sentiment analysis and being able to color this. So now I don't actually have to go read all these things. It's going to do... This is very simple. It's actually something MicroStrategy, you can't see this, but we have some off-the-shelf R scripts. We have one that does sentiment analysis, and literally like imagine Excel that had a sentiment function, you would put the text in between the parentheses and it spits out the sentiment. It's on a scale of -5 for awfully bad and +5 for awfully good, except for the fact that this one's kind of simple. I can't tell the difference between two words. And so it's more of a word counter, and therefore it's not predictive analytics. In fact, this is just descriptive analytics. It's just describing what's going on the evolutionary scale of analytics. This one's actually not that difficult. One that would be more difficult is a text classifier. And the example I have here is one where they've taken IMDb, the Internet Movie Database, 50,000 reviews, and they've scored these. 25,000 were reviews where they said something negative. 25,000 were reviews where they said something positive. And now, in typical machine learning fashion, I can go and look and see if there are any relationships between some input variables and whether something was a good or a bad review. But when I have only the text, then maybe my sentiment analysis counter isn't that great of a thing. Maybe it's not picking up enough. Well, you may have heard that neural networks, and I mentioned the phone example. The phone example works because they actually have some neural networks pre-trained to look for human faces. Well, similarly, they have things that are pre-trained to look at word vectors. And Stanford, for example, 2014, took all of the Wikipedia pages in 2014, came up with 6 billion tokens, and that's the 6 billion most common things that would happen, everything from a single digit to short phrases, to even some long phrases that may be common. And it builds out something called a word vector. And what I show here, I don't realize it's hard in the back to see, but in like the 1850s, the word awful meant full of awe. That was a good thing. Sometime around the 1800s, awful became associated with horrible and unappealing. And now something that's awfully good could be a good thing, right? So words have a vector and association with it. And training a model using this pre-processed network is something that I don't have to go. Stanford already did that. I can embed this neural layer at the front of my deep learning model, and now it's picked up on that jargon, and now I can go and do deep learning and have it spit out results that are much better. In fact, we did do this with MicroStrategy. What I wanted to get into here, in fact, can I skip a little bit? What I did want to get into this with, MicroStrategy is a platform. You can do a lot of things within our platform. How many people here, if you said you were a data science type, use R? one R person. How many people use Python? A little bit more on Python, and Python seems to be more of a popular language, mainly because it's a little bit more popular within the web field. R is a little bit more of a learning curve and tied to statisticians. But if you're an R data scientist, you can usually do stuff in a local console. You're going to do stuff locally. And in the end, now you come up with your magical thing. How did I get that out to my users? 90% of the time, people are scoring stuff and sticking it in the database, that ETL flow that I mentioned. Maybe I'm a Python person. I'm going to use Python to do things. I do stuff in my Python environment. Now I come up with my good, you know, movie review analyzer. I could then, you know, score all my movie reviews and stick them in the database. But when a new review comes out Saturday night and my data miner went home, I can't apply that model until I get another full round trip. Well, with MicroStrategy, we can source the data. In fact, we're known for our governed data. We can then also then deploy that analytic for scoring, so it happens very fast in the environment, and you don't have to wait for a batch window. But all of the options are available, and there's different times when you're going to use different ones. But it's your choice. You get to choose which technology fits best for you. You can use R or Python in either one of these cases. This last case for a test classifier, I'm actually showing you what it takes to build one of these networks. So this is going through those 50,000 records. You actually split them up into a couple different sets. We hold some out for validation. In fact, most of the time is spent validating the model and some things that are going here. And if you've never seen a neural network built, what's going on is it's trying to find the minimum loss while trying to avoid memorizing the data. In the end, it took over an hour to go ahead and do this analysis and find our model. But when I could visualize that model with MicroStrategy, I find that it's about 94% accurate. And I can do things like my confusion matrix, how many times did it actually get it right and wrong. I can see that's there's 900 actual negative reviews that were classified as positive versus about 867 positive reviews that were classified falsely as negative. So false positive and false negative rates can be important. If this was a test for cancer, you'd want to really make sure that if you tell someone they have cancer, you'd like to make sure that they really do have cancer before they go through all that pain. But even more conversely, if someone has cancer and you tell them they don't, that's even worse. So depending on your false positive and false negatives, these are things that you can all get out of the process. And it kind of doesn't matter if you did a neural network or whatever algorithm you use. In the end, you can begin to measure those things, including lift charts. If I was going to try and sort these things and put the most likely ones first, that's what I could get out of it as well. And this one actually used a pre-trained word vector. If you have a domain that's different, that's cool. You can train your own word vectors and bring that together. So maybe your business doesn't match Wikipedia in 2014 and has a different lexicon. That's okay. You can build that as well. There's YouTube videos on that. Bringing this all together in an intelligent way, that was kind of the last thing I put on there. Part of what's the giveaway gifts on there is our map of the intelligent enterprise.
Correct.
And so we've really thought this through, and MicroStrategy has been around for 30 years. We not only have understood what layers of information, where do you want to do the data science, where do you want to do mobile, but also the roles in your organization. What does a marketing person need? What does an operations person need? Help you understand how to succeed with that. How do you manage the flow of information through your system from development to QA to production? How do you control data quality and make sure data quality issues are addressed up front? Because if you don't address the data quality up front, you've got a weak foundation for everything else. We've got a lot of recommendations for that. Here's my version, a little bit simpler, schematic. You've got a diversity of data sources at the bottom. We have connectors to a lot of different things. You also have a variety of users that you connect to, from business users to people maybe on the factory floor to executives in the front suite to your suppliers or maybe your vendors that you want to push this information to. We have a lot of our customers are using MicroStrategy and allowing their vendors and customers to directly connect in and access that data because it just improves the relationship. I've got a lot more in detail, but I think I'm going to leave time for some Q&A. Some best practices. I skipped one best practice here. There's a lot of open source code tools available. I'm going to make an argument that artificial intelligence, deep learning, machine learning isn't really a technology problem anymore. It's not that you couldn't find the hardware or the software to do it. It's a people problem. And you'd either need to find good people or train good people. And citizen data scientist is a great field these days. being able to, people who just love data and don't mind rolling up their sleeves and jumping in. It is something that takes experience, and that's a little bit of the collaboration between the business teams and the data science teams. The last gentleman from Think Analytics gave a great talk. Talk about having silos, their data science silo, different than other silos. We kind of like to break down those barriers. If that analytic doesn't leave the five people in the basement who are building it, then you're probably not getting the value out of it that you should. On the other hand, if there's a valuable thing that needs to get out there, MicroStrategy is the best at delivering that information no matter what technology you use to develop it. Finally, it takes time. You're going to iterate on this. You're going to iterate and iterate frequently, fail better, faster, because your first model is likely going to be your worst model. And you're going to continue to try and look and find for the model that fits things best. For the managers in this room, that means that if you do a data science project, you've got to give them more than 1 or 2 weeks. You know, ideally, you're giving them 3 to 6 months, and you're giving some rope for them to play with and some safety to fail. And even if you can't find a good model because sometimes the data just doesn't support it, you're going to find out why. There must be something missing there. There must be something else there, and it's going to lead you to another discovery. And then the other thing is all models have a time dimension. They get old over time. Styles change, preferences change, and this and that. And just because you build a model once doesn't mean it stays static over time. It becomes something that you really have to incorporate into your organization's DNA, that you're going to do that and make it part of your core competencies. I've got more slides with details about MicroStrategy and things like that, but in the interest of time, I'd open it up for questions. Any questions, comments? Yes.
First, thank you very much. That's very interesting stuff. I'm a data geek, so I really enjoyed that very much.
Thank you.
My question goes to, you know, the diversity of the data sources that you're talking about. You know, not all data points are created equal, and or, you know, with respect to quality, especially with some of the newer technologies like, you know, the in-home stuff, the facial recognition, and so how do you guys manage those different levels of quality in the data that are going into some of your models?
We actually, when I started the company, ETL, extract, translate, or transform and load, we left that to the other guys, like Informatica and stuff. But in this age of self-service and dashboarding, we have some pretty good data wrangling capabilities where we can go ahead and look for those things, where LA is LA, or is it a previous L dot, A dot? Those should really be the same things, and we can build up rules that will go and address those data quality problems. So as we begin to access data from a source, we can have that data wrangling code working on that, possibly transforming it. Maybe you've gotten a zip code. Let's see, you get a zip code. I want to mash that up with my census data that I wanted to load from somewhere, because if I know someone's zip code, I can figure out their median income. And while that doesn't tell me anything about that individual, I still don't know them. Probably I've got an idea of where they're living, what their social environment. It's different to know somebody lives in Brentwood than in someplace else that may not be as affluent.
Yeah, and I mean, when you're talking about stuff like census data or zip codes or things that are well established, that's one thing. But I'm thinking about more like, you know, Alexa data.
Yeah.
You know, like word recognition and things like that are very new, where, you know, like I took a picture recently of myself and there was a statue in the back and it tried to facial recognition the statue, you know, to a friend of mine. So those kinds of things that are not quite there yet, like, especially with respect to social media.
And, you know, that's a little bit of the function of the application that you're using. We have an application that I didn't include today, but imagine I want to use my cell phone to take a picture of that cup, mm-hmm. see what other cups are available. Maybe I want to go buy one of that cup.
Right.
But how do I know it wants that cup instead of a box that maybe a bottle for perfume?
Right.
It is tough. Image recognition is difficult. That's one reason why I gave that word recognition example, because mm-hmm. it's much simpler to do. You know, words tend to flow linearly, and images are multidimensional and have noise and things like that. So I don't think MicroStrategy is going to solve those problems for you. But as they flow in and as you become aware of them, and that's typically the life of a data miner. They spend 75% to 95% of their time working to get clean data. And I'll argue from the sources, and one thing I didn't point out, but we do have a metadata layer here that really does isolate the users from the details of the tables and the systems and the things that they're getting at. And it is that metadata, that abstraction layer, that makes it easy, not only for a user to say, hey, you told me that was Joe and it's really a statue. Okay, now I can go back and see what was going on there, and he didn't have to tell you that, oh, the image on number 3, 4, 5, 6, or, you know, It's a great way to interact, and it really forms what MicroStrategy is a true business intelligence platform. We're not a tool. We are a platform that allows you to connect mobile users securely and do it in very fast real time and take on the alphabet soup of new technologies that can continue to flow. Other questions? Well, Greg and Scott and I are going to be around this afternoon. Thank you very much for your time, and enjoy the rest of your time.
And if we run out, just give a card, and we'll mail you one.
Good question.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Great.
Yes.
Oh, that's right.
And you had to take off. You went away. Yes, that's what it was. Okay. Yeah.
And then you were going to a complication.
Yes.
But then you just
I was trying to score one.
Okay.
Tell you the secret right now.
If they want, we can
Where's this kid called the white size thing?
Yeah.
So you're still doing this stuff?
We are in the, what's it called?
There's so many things. I'm actually working specifically with
TV
marketing group.
Okay.
I've been at screeners and
for all. So they are.
It's kind of like you switch industries.
Would you be better again?
6 years. I haven't tested it perfect. But I was looking at it.
Come over here. I'm going to
switch it. It's like every 5 or 6 years
with Interior.
With Interior. And then the interesting thing was also continue to do a variety of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And interesting is you do things with ATG, hardcore technical benchmarks, too.
Yeah.
Okay. More business discovery and data modeling as well as general.
I'm also working.
We were going to grab lunch. Jennifer,
you should send me your resume.
Next time I make it, I'm working.
So she was But your wife was a partner.
To get into this position.
She actually has not chosen.
She doesn't work.
Yeah, she doesn't.
You get the glory.
No, well, not necessarily.
She gets the glory. Customer service stuff. If you're not paying attention to your problems,
I know, that's the other thing. And so I'm keeping busy.
truth aside, it's the perception of that,
right? So cloud and basically data science, right? So those are the things.
So anyhow, I'm guessing that is perfect for something.
That'd be great. So let's get to my we'll get Jennifer.
It was great to kind of, I mean, I knew you were an interrogator.
Sure. No, this is good. She's so efficient. She'll probably reach out to you.
Totally capable.
Okay, great.
Yeah, she's good to kind of. I own her response.
Okay.
Apologize.
Okay. Best presentation at the 10 of the morning. I found that it was. I know a little bit of a sales pitch, and it should be, but it was also super informative and valuable. I really got a lot out of it. So
cool.
Thank you
very much.
And fun. I kept thinking. Oh, I like the idea of the little monitors. That was great. Really good. Nice.
Yeah, you did really well.
Thank you. Thanks.
So, well done.
Well, between us chickens, I thought this was going to go off at 4 o'clock. I'm thinking everybody's going to be away for happy hour or tired or something, and you couldn't just like.
Well, now you got it done, so now you can relax a couple hours and go to happy hour. Or you just start happy hour now at the.
Started right now at lunch.
Find a bar somewhere.
Actually, I started this morning.
No.
No wonder you were so alive
late. I'll tell you why I said what I said, because I've been to two others already, and I can tell. You don't actually do this for a living. You are a presenter of this, that you've done a lot of research. I get the sense you've actually done stuff.
Oh, yeah, he thinks about
exactly.
Stuff all the time. Yeah.
So that was a difference.
Thank you.
I appreciate it, so thank you.
You're very welcome. What is Wave 7?
Oh, Wave 7, we're a consulting company for the media and entertainment. This guy knows I've been around
way back
for 20 plus years.
Awesome.
Don't date yourself.
Oh no, 20 is being kind. I found if I say 30 years, it's
then
like, wait a minute.
Then no one's talking to you.
Yeah,
right.
This gets really old. No, we've worked with all the media and entertainment companies. We're doing a lot at Sony Pictures, and we're also over at CAA right now, and one of their data scientists was right next to me here and listening to it as well. And I was curious, I was going to ask you. Of course, I always say we when I'm at a client. We use MicroStrategy and CAA. Are they there?
They
do
a lot of development homegrown stuff right now. They haven't gone like they're building for their clientele individual stuff.
Yeah.
Versus an enterprise platform that allows you to share. So you put the metric here, and all 100 or 200 agents can get that metric and share that metric. So they're more of they're doing some Power BI and a little bit of that and a little bit of a lot of homegrown.
Just a lot of one thing at a time.
Yeah. Now, we were trying to get with Eric Iverson, and we were going to try summertime. We wanted to sit down with us. We wanted to walk through that roadmap.
I took a copy of that and took your mug too because I needed it today.
Yeah.
But you get those small little cups, I hate them.
Oh, yeah.
So, Eric, of course, Eric and I have known each other.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
And we're actually helping him. My business partner and I are doing their 3-year plan right now.
What we could do is we could have one of our guys dial in with that and kind of give you an overview of what that really means to
would be helpful. You know, we've been kind of working with the different groups. The data scientist, first of all, the lead is in, where is he? He's not in LA. He's in New York, but he's not in LA. He works remotely, but his team is all there. And we just haven't, we've gone over what his game plan, what he wants to do, but we haven't really sat down beyond that.
Yeah.
Whereas other groups, like television, yeah, go really deep with where they're going. But I mean, data science is huge, right?
It's it's amazing.
For everyone, but.
Because I came from Cognos, which was in the 2000s, right? And I come to MicroStrategy, data science is now this whole area that we didn't pay a lot of attention to, but now it's everybody's touching it. It's like, you know, somebody's telling me these kids getting out of college who've got that training, they get $125,000 a year.
Get out of school.
By the way, do you know these people? Have you got introduced?
Okay, I'm Rick. Rick. Nice presentation.
Thank you. Greg.
Rick.
Yeah. Scott, what's your name?
Yen.
Yen has been
with you guys?
No, we were just catching up. Teradata, he's been in the sales, what do you call this? He's a guy
technical
that goes
support.
Technical
oh, yeah.
support that goes and help them model and prep. And
oh, right.
And when you, that one of the things you said that I was like, I love it, is when you said 75% was in data cleanup. We've been on a lot of gigs together.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this is the guy that just quickly crunches through, cleans up a bunch of sample data, because he's got 1 week to turn it around and put together a model.
That's okay.
I'm
but I was at Teradata before this game. I was working Rich Bernardo.
He's a free agent. I'm going to go try to find something that I can utilize him, but you guys would be foolish not to consider this guy. He is dynamite stuff. I mean, every time I've worked with him, he's like done magic in putting together prototypes and demos. So.
Perfect. Yeah. Are you, you're independent or you work for Teradata?
I used to work for Teradata.
Okay, there you go. Perfect. Yeah, because we.
So I'm not sure what I want to do.
Yeah.
In my next phase, but
that's good. Yeah.
I'm gonna quickly try to figure it out, but if you guys beat me to it, you would be smart.
Okay.
That's my pitch for him.
Oh,
yeah. Anyhow, good stuff. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I have to go take another look at MicroStrategy now. Because we, in this world, you kind of lumped them into a certain tool, right?
Yes.
MicroStrategy has always worked well.
Were they the evil empire to you?
Yeah,
then?
I'm sure.
No,
we were they were our best partner.
So sorry. MicroStrategy collaborated.
It was a chocolate peanut butter.
Right. One of MicroStrategy's only acquisition was the TerraCube team I was leading at Teradata.
Ah, right. You were leading. Okay.
And
I use that. Yeah.
So the relationship was so strong that I joined this team and I'm actually a hardware guy. By September, I'm saying you need to triple the number of engineers or cancel the project because the SQL engine wasn't working. Well, Gap was a company that had a really good SQL engine. And so my team, and that's why I'm in San Diego working for MicroStrategy for 18 years.
18 years,
and so it was a great relationship. The two fit because we leave the data in place. We don't build,
The ones who did the in-database.
Absolutely. All parallelism with Teradata.
Pulling huge amounts of data out and
processing. When I left Teradata 18 years ago, I thought, databases are kind of done. You know, they've done everything they can.
Boy, was I wrong.
No, it's like the
data lakes and
industry
schema on green.
Well, but I think it's kind of changing. Is
the data
Well, the whole MPP environment is also changing, right?
That's why I'm saying.
Did you know Carson Schmidt?
I know Carson.
I worked with Carson and Carson.
Oh, yeah.
It was so good point.
Yeah.
We're so small. Sony was blaming Teradata.
Carson
was
way back.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
I think he's finally retired.
He retired 2 years ago.
Yeah.
He sold his Teradata stock in one time.
I still have good friends. It's a great organization. Do you know what Tony Maresco?
I know Tony.
So Tony came over with me and he was in the with me. He's going for strategy. But Tony was, I think, more of a services side before he moved over to RBM.
They actually embarked on development efforts to develop database functions that did something,
Right.
So they're still doing that because a lot of the, functions, including
they took about 50% of
some of the machine learning and AI functions, are moving
and it's this whole process of now.
Tim Miller and a lot of his team.
Yeah, Tim's still around. Tim's still around.
I probably would still.
So it's got to
come. The team didn't get sold, and it was the best decision I ever made.
It's one of those things when they make sometimes they make a decision.
Sometimes you don't like to get too comfortable.
Instead of
having that part of it.
Going back and actually the right decision, they try to put a band-aid on it.
At one point my strategy decided that then you had to be in DC or China to work in
another layer.
So about 3 years ago I've been focused a little more on the field.
Sure.
That's great. In fact, innovating in that, it's a great
I've always liked
to innovate
you do more interesting things.
Wow. A lot more interesting things.
Well,
and you didn't want to leave San Diego.
Are you making any inroads there?
We need,
not right
we
now.
We need more customers in San Diego.
How did your decision come about for leaving Teradata?
I'm more
Very recently, I know they've been doing that for the last few years.
They've been doing that. For the last couple years,
there's a guy
there was a wave earlier this year. It's not like
yeah.
before today, they decided
everybody knows him,
to change
of
things.
But
teams are dropping, and there's a lot of confusion in some ways, right? Even
Ray Chastain. We did a quick.
Yeah. Well, there's always the tension of why do we need the high-end hardware, why do we need refrigerators and stuff,
Right.
When I started there, actually, NCR, which then ended up on Teradata, had the first 32-bit microprocessor chip before anybody, but then they used to make the chips. Then we bought the chips from Intel. We used to make the boards and the boxes, and we got those from Dell. By the time I switched over to the software engineering, it was only, you know, probably not that big of an organization. You have to take over a software project if you want to go anywhere. You need diversity.
Their internet-based.
But one last time I talked to Carson, he was just saying that, you know, they still sell, but it's just big, you know, the slice of the budget is going to go to.
And it's going to come to me, but they have their Netflix equivalent.
There was one saying that 10-15 years ago, right? Hardware improvements will mitigate software advantages, right? And that's what's happening, is that if you can buy the hardware to fix a problem, you don't have to spend it on the software, right? You can have so-so software, and you just make it up and then buying more compute. And especially now when compute is kind of unlimited, and when storage is unlimited, then your reason for having a high-end system to justify it.
It has a curse of having some very large, very big, very important customers.
Applications, right? Yeah. I mean, migration cost is very, very high, right? So it's sort of like a divorce, right? If it's going to cost you half of your assets to get a divorce, you really think about it, right? And that's the thing is, they're locked in to a large extent because,
of course, most of
all the stuff that you hardware vendor takes over the ownership and risk of managing the hardware.
Years ago,
right?
Together.
And then you, as a company, say, "Well, within these limits, I can scale up
100%." And then we just separated that hardware on site to be able to back together and scale.
But it's got to make sense because if I'm not using it, then someone
really good stuff, great connections.
But hardware,
I'll try to introduce you to Vincent. He knows a lot of people.
Yeah, but we were taking a $200 drive and putting in a $500 customer replaceable unit. Things like that. That actually were valuable, right? When you have that many disk drives, you need to be able to pop one out, pop one in.
It's a dangerous and automatic failover. I mean, the system
availability
was on premise system was just. Our system running 100% for like 2 years.
So now we have our studio, which allows you to use Python or any other language right in there. So if it changed the code or you change something in it, then it actually goes to our metadata link.
Natiza hit Oracle really good, though. Appreciate it.
It took couple years to wake up, right? After Natiza came out, right? It says, we don't want to cannibalize. Say, well, if you don't do it, someone else is going to do it. So you better come up with your own. And they did. They came out with compliance, and within 4 years, Natiza was like,
It's a great industry, it really is.
It's interesting. I think especially with the whole data science and what you can do nowadays, right?
So when I joined the company, CEO at the time, was alarmed about it. Just to kind of give you the market strategy, it was in the news a lot back in those days. You do want to get on the external data and then they put gas or almost a couple of examples.
Good
times.
All righty, man, they shout out every single one.
I love it.